Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 7, The Descendants of King Mandata. Text number 1, and I'll just keep on reading until we come to the purports. Shukadeva Goswami said, "The most prominent among the sons of Mandata was he who is celebrated as Ambarisha. Ambarisha was accepted as son by his grandfather, Yuvanashva. Ambarisha's son was Yuvanashva, and Yuvanashva's son was Harita. In Mandata's dynasty, Ambarish, Harita, and Yuvanashva were very prominent." Text 2. The serpent brothers of Narmada gave Narmada to Purukutsa. Being sent by Vasuki, he took Purusuka to the lower region of the universe. Purport. Before describing the descendants of Purukutsa, the son of Mandata, Shukadeva Goswami first describes how Purukutsa was married to Narmada, who was induced to take him to the lower region of the universe. There in Rasatala, the lower region of the universe, Purukutsa, being empowered by Lord Vishnu, was able to kill all the Gandharvas who deserved to be killed. Purukutsa received the benediction from the serpents that anyone who remembers this history of his being brought by Narmada to the lower region of the universe will be assured of safety from the attack of snakes. Oh, there's something good that we come from hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So don't fear snakes anymore. You already heard the story. Because I wouldn't go out and play with them either. The son of Purukutsa was Trasadashu, who was the father of Anaranya. Aranya's son was Haryashva, the father of Praruna. Praruna was the father of Tribandana. The son of Tribandana was Satyavrata, who is celebrated by the name of Trisanku, because he kidnapped the daughter of a Brahmana. When she was being married, his father cursed him to become a Chandala, lower than a Shudra. Thereafter, by the influence of Vishwamrita, he went to the heavenly planetary system, the heavenly planets, the higher planetary system, the heavenly planets, in his material body. But because of the prowess of the demigods, he fell back downward. Nonetheless, by the power of Vishwamrita, he did not fall all the way down. Even today, he can still be seen hanging in the sky, head downward. Doesn't sound like a very good benediction. Now, there's a yoga posture called Shirshasana, where you stand on your head. So, he's been practicing that since the Bhagavatam was written. Text number 7. These are just names. Anyhow, I'll just read the translation of the purport. Anyhow, a little practice of Sanskrit. Tri Shankavo Harishchandro Vishwamrita Vishistayo Yanmi Nimitam Abud Yudam Pakshiyor Bahu Varshikam. Tri Shankava, the son of Tri Shanku, Harishchandra, by the name Harishchandra, Vishvamrita Vishistayo, Vishvamrita and Vishista, Yat Nimitam, because of Harishchandra, abhut, there was yudam, a great fight. Pakshino, both of them have been converted into birds. Bahu Varshikam, for many years. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The son of Tri Shanku was Harishchandra. Because of Harishchandra, there was a quarrel between Vishramrita and Vashista, who for many years fought one another, having been transformed into birds. Purport. Vishramrita said, and Vishista were always inimical. Formerly, Vishramrita was a Kshatriya, and by undergoing severe austerities, he wanted to become a Brahmana. But Vishista would not agree to accept him. In this way, there was always disagreement between the two. Later, however, Vishista accepted him because of Vishramrita's quality of forgiveness. Once Harishchandra performed a yajna for which Vishramrita was the priest. But Vishramrita, being angry at Harishchandra, took away all his possessions, claiming them as a contribution of Dakshina. Vishista, however, did not like this, and therefore a fight arose between Vishista and Vishramrita. The fighting became so severe that each of them cursed the other. One of them said, "May you become a bird." And the other said, "May you become a duck." Thus both of them became birds and continued fighting for many years because of Harishchandra. We can see that such great mystic yogis as Subhara Muni became a victim of sense gratification. And such great sages as Vishista and Vishramrita became birds. This is the material world. Welcome to the material world. Abrava Bhuvana Loka Puna Avartana Ujana. Within this material world, or within this universe, however, elevated one may be in the material qualities, one must suffer the conditions of birth, death, old age, and disease. Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi. Therefore, Krishna says that this material world is simply miserable. Dukhalyam ashasvatam. The Bhagavatam says, padam, padam, yadvipadam. At every step there is danger. Therefore, because the Krishna consciousness movement provides the opportunity for the human being to get out of this material world simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, this movement is the greatest benediction in human society. The ninth canto has two major themes. One of them is to give us an indication of what the dynasties are leading up to Lord Krishna. That Krishna just didn't appear. He appears in a certain dynasty, in a certain circumstance, for a certain reason. And, as it said, janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tatvataha tyaktvideham punarjanma naitimam iti sarjana. That we should understand Krishna's birth and his activities. That they're divyam, that they're transcendental. But Krishna must appear in the material world in a certain way, otherwise his disguise as an ordinary person would not be possible. The demons want Krishna to be an ordinary person. And if he wasn't seen as an ordinary person, then he would be seen as an extraordinary person, and that would spoil the whole pretense in the material world that there's no God, or that we can become God, or we're a competitor of God. Therefore, Krishna in order to satisfy the desires of the demons, also appears in a certain family and acts in a certain way in order to simultaneously set an example of how ordinary conditioned souls should act so they become Krishna conscious. Just like Krishna married 16,108 queens, and he set the example of a perfect householder. There's not one instance of Krishna divorcing any of the queens. There's no even separation. Nor, when the queens had children, were any of them juvenile delinquents. We don't find any drug addicts among Krishna's children. They were all of noble birth, and they were all of noble quality. And they were all powerful. None of them were short-lived. None of them were crazy. So Krishna sets the example when he comes, but at the same time, Krishna supposedly was killed by an arrow shot by a hunter. So then the demons can say, just see, your God, how powerful was he? An ordinary hunter killed him with his arrow. Therefore, Krishna is daksha. He does many things simultaneously. And these families that he appears in are not ordinary families. After all, if you have one has the association of sages, even like Vishvamrita or Vishista as your priest, you cannot be an ordinary personality. And these are being taken, these dynasties are extending back not only the beginning of Kali Yuga, but all the way through all these different yugas. Now, of course, for the common person in this material world nowadays, they will think this is all mythology, that the Bhagavatam is just a collection of hallucinations written by Śrīla Vyāsadeva. If at all it was written by Śrīla Vyāsadeva, it's just some fairy tale that they've written. They've invented these names, and they've invented this history. But that's not the idea. The idea is that, first of all, it shows that even if you can invent such names, there are such names. There is a history. And of course, this ninth canto will extend all the way up to Kali Yuga. So perhaps there's some even possibility of affirming from the Srimad Bhagavatam, some dynasties extending within Kali Yuga. I'm not so sure about that, but that's always possible. On the other hand, the second point is that Srimad Bhagavatam in the ninth canto shows us it doesn't matter what yuga one is born in, or how exalted one's family is, or one's family priests are, it's still the material world. One can become very powerful and do extraordinary things by austerity and following the proper procedure for mystic yoga or cultivation of knowledge. But still, at the end of the day, what can you do? It comes down to the same thing as eating, sleeping, and here mating and defending. So here we have defending. We can become so powerful as Vashistha Muni and Vishvamrita, still they're envious of each other. So envious, they curse each other to become a bird. Unfortunately for each other, they're powerful. And so each one of them became a bird. Not only a bird, but one of them became a duck. How embarrassing. At least if you can become a bird, become a swan or something. But a duck? You go through austerity and penances for millions and billions of years, you wind up as a duck fighting within some other bird. Or you become one of the sons of one of Sagara, whoever it was, 40,000 sons, and you attack Doom Dubi, burns it to ashes. What a way to go. Not only you have 40,000 brothers, you think, well, I have a pretty good family, and then all of them wind up as ashes. So the Bhagavatam is not meant as an advertisement for the glories of the material world. It's ultimately the 10th canto is there to take us out of the material world into spiritual consciousness. But as long as we have some aspiration, well, it's not so good. Ljubljana is getting a little worse. It's not as bad as New York, but it's getting worse. Maybe Interlochen sounds sweet. Maybe I should take a trip there, a vacation, for some thousands of years, and enjoy in the Nandakandana forest, fly around in a swan or something. Maybe I'd live for a long time. But it's all a dream, because we've already done that. We've been up and down, from Brahmaloka down to Nagaloka, as mentioned here. We've been through the whole thing, and here we are now. And we're still thinking, maybe give it one more try. Maybe I missed something. Maybe there's something, if I can just stay around the material world, it's going to get better. So that's the hope. Matter of fact, that's the whole advertisement. Yes, it's bad, we know, inflation, the food is, you know, GMOs and everything, but don't worry, it's going to get better. No, it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. So this idea I have to live here longer because it's going to get better, I'm going to miss something. Don't worry. You're not going to miss anything. We've already been through the whole thing. And it always winds up the same thing. Birth, death, old age, and disease. On the other hand, the human form of life is an opportunity to find out and hear about Krishna's activities in the internal energy also. We're actually hearing about Krishna's activities in the first 9 cantos in the external energy. Because although it may appear to us that there's a Vashista, there's a Vishramrita, there's a Harishchandra, but actually that's not really what's going on. That's only superficial. What's really going on is in the heart of Vishvamrita, there is the soul, and then there's the super soul. Within everyone's heart, all these actors in the Bhagavatam, there's Krishna along with the soul. And they're enjoying or suffering the desires that they've accumulated in the form of these different activities, which are taking part within the material energy. And some of them, by good fortune, they become elevated so that their dream that they have is a little bit more pleasant. And some of them are having a very unpleasant dream, like us. Still, we have the opportunity to get out of the dream if we understand. First of all, the first 9 cantos are just actually basically meant to convince us, don't change this dream for another dream. Don't think that this dream is not what I wanted. Let me qualify myself for a better dream. But that's called Shravam Eva Kevalam, a waste of time. And therefore the Bhagavatam gives us an opportunity to also wake up and serve Krishna. And therefore, while we're in the material world, tolerate the problems of material existence, at the same time, try to understand our relationship with how Krishna, this world is related to Krishna, and ultimately what real life is like in the spiritual world. So we can change our desires from trying to improve our material existence to improving our spiritual existence. And spiritual existence will be explained in the 10th canto, where we can become encouraged that this is a really nice existence. This is really the existence I would like, and therefore let me act in such a way, even this material existence, so I can qualify myself for the spiritual existence. This material life is very short, but it's a preparation for the next one. And whatever we're doing now will prepare us for our next lifetime, either material or spiritual. Obviously, 99.9% of the people in the material world are preparing themselves for a lower life. But those who are fortunate, they can prepare themselves for a better life by not becoming entrapped by the false advertisements promising happiness through a perverted type of sense gratification. That simply leads to frustration and bewilderment. On the other hand, the simply chanting of Hare Krishna, which can bring us, can awaken ourselves, we can wake up, can give us into bring us into association with Krishna and his devotees, and therefore experience our own identity again, our own position as being eternally happy, full of love and bliss, and appreciating how wonderful everything actually is when we get rid of our false coverings of material existence, when we simply agree to who we actually are, and that doesn't happen to be God. We have to be a servant of God rather than God. That's all we have to know, that I'm actually a servant of God. I'm not the Supreme Lord. And therefore, if I simply agree to serve Krishna, then I can avoid all these problems of material existence. And even if I very expertly become better and better at so-called lording it over the material nature, which is only an illusion, still it'll always wind up the same thing. Frustration and confusion. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments? So the next time a plane comes from Indraloka, don't get on board. Although it doesn't come very often, by the way, especially in Kali Yuga. Yes?
Question. How to avoid this tendency to want to control, to be in the center?
Well, first of all, we're not controlling. And we're not in the center. We're only desiring to control, and desire to be in the center. That's what devotional service is. We do things for Krishna, and we try to put Krishna in the center of our lives, rather than this body. Because we can't be in the center. We're only 1/10,000th the size of the appearance size. We can't even see who we are. To speak of the center of what? We're in the center of this big machine we're riding around in. We're even smaller than an ant. Imagine if you were an ant and you got into a machine. You were puffed up because of how powerful you become, because you're in this machine. But you're just an ant. But an ant is like a skyscraper compared to our actual selves. So we're not controlling, we're desiring, and Krishna is controlling through his energies. And we're not the center. Krishna is the center because he's controlling everything, including ourselves. So it's just a question of cultivating knowledge and working according to that knowledge, accepting it, that knowledge, by actually applying it, by desiring to fulfill Krishna's desires. So how to do it? We ask, what does Krishna want me to do? And when we investigate humbly Guru Sadhana Shastra, we know what Krishna wants us to do, because Krishna tells us, as a super soul in the heart, he confirms it, and we do it to please him, then we get out. Then we realize, I'm not the center of the universe, and I'm not controlling anything here, except for my own desires. Anything else? Kala Karantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.